power because they're in power and they can just do it, you know?
And they don't care about us, they care about themselves.
It's like the people, cops think they're so much above us, like we're just not good enough, and we just, like if we give tickets to people for stupid shit like sitting down, we'll suddenly like just give up and submit to the stupidness of... I want to rant.
Yeah.
But,
woo. Sounds good, sister.
And that was, I guess, Valerie and Leah talking about the stupid shit that we all got to deal with, given the city council's new laws, police practices. Even distinguished petitioners have to deal with stupid shit, looks like. And Quintus is still in the studio. In case you have any questions or comments, there was some interesting positive developments around stupid shit, so to speak. You can get a lot of details on this on the Indie Media website, www.santacruz.indiemedia.org. But the upshot of it is that the move-along law is due to be found, or has already been found, unconstitutional in an opinion that will be written and, I guess, released in early April. But it was announced by Judge Michael Barton, I call him Barracuda Barton, in courtroom. It was Department 4, but he actually, normally it's, he shows up in, what was it, 4? I guess it was 2, not 4. In any case, he was in the courthouse on Friday, and so was Steve Argue, and Steve Argue's attorney, Tony Bull. I've not always had the kindest things to say about attorney Tony Bull, and I'm still not terribly happy with a lot of his past performance, but he deserves a definite round of applause, pat on the back, and a handshake for his, actually it was sort of an 11th hour, he dug up an argument, I guess, the night before the constitutional arguments. There actually has not been a trial in Steve Argue's case because it was dismissed before trial on Friday because the law itself, Barton ruled, is constitutionally infirm. But what Tony Bull found and presented was that the move-along law, which is a law that says you cannot have what's called a display device, that is a table, or it can be something as small as a piece of cloth on the sidewalk holding seashells or an open guitar case, which you would use for people to put tips in as you play, for more than an hour on the sidewalk. And then you have to move it at least 100 feet, and you can't come back to the same spot for 24 hours with that display device. That's the city council's way of essentially kicking street performers in the ass, messing with political tablers, but most important, giving the police more tools to deal with poor people and homeless people, in essence, rubber stamping what they do and have been doing already, which is sort of look at somebody and say, do I want them there? Nah, I'll move them along. And you can't. We don't have loitering laws. Loitering laws were thrown out under the Larson decision of the early 80s, which haven't been returned yet. Instead, we have these bogus time, place, and manner regulations that don't really regulate time, place, and manner, but more have to do with criminalizing a class of people and giving the police, expanding police power in ways that we see are very unfortunate. It's like expanding executive power for Bush. You don't want to expand that kind of power. You want to contract it. If you have particular problems in particular areas, you want to deal with them. We heard Andrea Pritchard today from Berkeley talking about what the community may be getting together and dealing with problems in crime. I see no problem with police being given powers to investigate real crimes, but, of course, creating more bogus pseudo-crimes that are essentially ways for merchants to privatize the sidewalk or get rid of people they don't like the look of who are in the public spaces is truly abusive. You can see this kind of mentality happening here with Quintus, where he's using public space in the sense that it's a public forum on private space. But this kind of, this creeping mentality of we can do whatever the fuck we want because we are the merchants, we are the power, we are the police, seems to me to be an increasingly growing concern that phenomenon that I've been observing and unfortunately I've been experiencing as well directly. The Argue decision throughout the move-along law, which says, and the reason it was thrown out, as I said, was because of the ingenious argument by Tony Bull that the city permits and actually issues permits for commercial activities. Hence, you see the antique fair downtown, various other merchant fairs, where you can buy a permit to set up a table for as long as you want in a particular area, in a particular situation. But if you have a non-commercial event that you're doing, if you have a non-commercial table, that's the huge net that which the city catches up everything from political petitioners to homeless activists to homeless people with little displays. Please give me a dime for any of these items. That's even a person with a sign saying "Need help, please give money" has been called a display device, even though it's not. Display device is supposed to be under the law something for holding items. All these things have been caught up under this law of non-commercial events. And there is no permit process for non-commercial events in the city of Santa Cruz. You can't go down and get a permit to sit down and play the guitar for all day. But you can to sell little cheesy widgets or to sell overpriced dresses at the Pacific Trading Company in front of your store taking up the public sidewalk, or something of that sort. So Barton was put in a position where he might not have wanted to, but he felt he had to rule. This was so blatantly discriminatory to one group that he couldn't find a way around it. Now, I'm taking the negative position. I found Barton to be very bad on a number of issues, ranging from medical marijuana when he, as in medical marijuana, he had Alan Brady arrested for in the dead of night because he had, I think, 6 sacks of sterile marijuana seed he was using for, he had purchased in Gilroy, legally purchased, over the counter, and he was using it for food. He was creating some kind of, hemp peanut butter or protein peanut butter. This was over a decade ago. But Barton ratified this shit every step of the way. That, as far as I could see. And Barton is also, I've got to say, this nice guy. I mean, he isn't nasty to me personally. He was very polite to me when I went to court recently and was accused of jaywalking. The police and the city attorney's office spent thousands of dollars taking me to court for a jaywalking case where I was jaywalking after a peace rally. I wasn't jaywalking. I was actually, I was crossing Mission Street, as far as I could see, legally. The police didn't want me to do it, and I essentially told the police, I'm not jaywalking, I'm going to do it anyway. And they decided they had to assert their authority. You know, it'd be nice if they asserted their authority in circumstances where it made some real sense, like where people are threatening other people's safety or health. But just to show that any and every time that they assert their authority, they can assert their authority, that's where we find these dangerous power situations growing. They did that with me, and Barton, even though he... I'm actually confusing one case with another. I was found guilty on that case in another court. I was then arrested for jaywalking on Pacific Avenue, and Barton found me, even though he said there was a lot of conflicting testimony, and he wasn't sure what was really happening, but guilty. And he's a kind of a smooth guy. But in this case, in Steve's case, he did fine, and it was a good decision. We got an incoming call here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah. Just kind of had a comment on what you were saying about how the police can basically just make anything up whenever they want to get you how they want to. This Saturday, I was enjoying myself, so to say, and riding around town on my bicycle, and I'd had a few brewskis, and I passed by a party that was being broken up, and there was about 50, 60 people sitting on Seabright Avenue, and, cops show up, kind of assess the situation, wait for, a little bit more backup to arrive, and then once there's like 3 or 4 officers there, they walk to the side of the crowd, and without any prior warning, just one of the officers takes out his flashlight and shines it at the crowd and kind of moves it around at everyone and says, "In about 2 seconds, I'm going to randomly select someone, have them arrested, take them downtown to jail, and teach them a lesson."
Wow, this is a Santa Cruz police officer?
Santa Cruz police officer saying he's going to randomly select someone and punish them for, to teach the collective, a group, a lesson.
Now, were these people, breaking windows, rioting, screaming at the top of their lungs?
Man, they were chilling, they were drinking beer, they were smoking weed, they weren't doing anything. I mean, they were just having a good time on the side of Seabright. And, granted, I can see the cops, they don't want to have 50, 60 people sitting on Seabright at like 11 o'clock at night. Okay, I can understand
what,
that.
What was the cross street, Seabright and?
Like, I think it was like Hall. It was really close to, I guess Logan would be the best cross street.
What's a
Seabright and Logan.
What's a landmark around there that I could visualize?
You know the Chinese restaurant right there? On Seabright? It's like very, very close to the Day's Market, basically. The intersection of Seabright and Murray.
Okay, some of these street names are escaping me, but yeah, I think I know what you're... Is it near the railroad tracks and the brewery and that sort of thing?
Totally, it's on that side of Seabright.
Okay.
So, you know, I could understand that the cops want to get rid of these people, you know, but they could have just said, hey, everyone, break it up. Instead, this idiot walks up and goes, well, I'm going to randomly select someone to punish, so the rest of you learn a lesson. And I just hear this, and I'm just like, ha! Hey, buddy! That's unconstitutional. That's your police? You call that police work? I mean, Santa Cruz's finest? Are you kidding? And I'd had a few, so I was kind of feeling a little brave. And I just yelled at him. I just heckled that statement. I mean, I really was just like, ha! You're a dummy! And a lot of people kind of laughed and this and that. So, of course, he shined his light right at me. You know, who the hell's yelling at me? Who's challenging my authority, making me look like an idiot? And, you know, I just smiled at him right in the spotlight. And I started to ride away on my bicycle. And they were more concerned with the other 50, 60 people that were there. So I managed to get away, but not before saying, Santa Cruz's finest, ha.
Did you notice the name of the cop or his badge number?
Nah, it was a big white guy. I couldn't recognize him. It was dark, you know. I didn't want to get too close to the guys because they were obviously looking to make an example out of someone. So
this was about 11 o'clock at night? Or
probably about that, yeah.
Quintus has a question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Was this at a residence?
Excuse me?
Were you at somebody's house? Were you in a yard? Where exactly?
It was a house party, yeah. And basically, I guess the cops had showed up prior to that and had said, party's over. And so the owners of the house kicked everyone out. But no one went anywhere. Everyone was just sitting on the front lawn, on the sidewalk, a little bit in the street, kind of just, you know, still, the party just kept going. So I guess the cops had came, left, everyone, you know, just went outside, and then they came back.
Were they kicking you out because it was an underage party, or because it was too loud, or I mean, what was the logic of this?
I wasn't there when they actually kicked everyone out in the first place. Uh-huh. So I just assumed that, I mean, there's a lot of people, it was probably too loud or something. But I don't know why they initially kicked everyone out of the house. I guess basically once they saw the massive crowd on Seabright, they just figured, oh, problems and potential problems, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, really, everyone was just having a good time. No one was breaking stuff. No one was vandalizing anything. I mean,
do you think the police officers saw anybody do anything illegal, like drinking underage or smoking pot? Or is it just more a matter of they just said everybody had to leave because they have to leave? I don't know.
Well, I mean, both. People were drinking. There were probably some underage people drinking, and I definitely smelled some herb. But, no, I mean, I think it was more about just clearing out the people.
Was it a very noisy gathering?
A little bit, yeah. I mean,
it sounds to me like, you know, the police officer might have been more appropriate for him to say, I've told you people to leave. I'm going to begin issuing citations for different violations very shortly if you don't, and then waited briefly and stood there. And I think that would have probably frightened them all away. It sounded like he was, again, using overkill if your account is accurate.
Yeah, no, I mean, I basically, that's not word for word in an account, but that is what happened, you know.
This assumes that the officer has a valid reason for being there in the first place, which he may or may not have. And I suppose if neighbors are complaining, mm-hmm. you know, some people have to work early Sunday mornings, and there's a level of noise after 10 o'clock at night where it's appropriate to say that should be less than...
I agree. And like, I agree with what you said. You know, had the officer taken a different approach, I probably wouldn't have yelled at him like, oh, you know. But his whole approach of, I'm going to arrest someone to make an example out of them, and make something up, you know, make up a charge. You know, that's really what he said. Like, I'm going to make something up. And so I just couldn't help but say, you can't do that. You know, that's bad police work. You're a bad cop.
But you indeed did feel intimidated, and you took the natural discretionary course, which is not to stand and say, am I right, to four people and have them say, yeah.
Well,
rather,
you know,
instead, you faded into the crowd because you realize that you're dealing with people who have armed force, the law, authority, etc.
Oh yeah,
in their hand,
I've been drinking. I did not want to be that person that he was going to make an example out of.
Right.
I just wanted to raise the fact that he could not do that legally. That it was just a, you know, an intimidation move, and that it is just bad police work. And I think there's a lot of that on this force. There's a lot of fucking cops that think, you know, they just think that that badge is a fucking license to kill or to do whatever they want. You know, not just kill, but to fucking lie, to cheat, to do whatever they want, to intimidate, to harass, to grope women, who knows what. I mean,
yeah, I mean, are you actually, but you're talking about things that you have any personal knowledge of, any of these four categories you've mentioned, theft,
well,
murder, sexual assault.
Yeah, I mean, there's been various cases of, you know, they shot Happy Dine years
Happy
ago.
Happy Dine, yeah.
They shot Happy, you know, for allegedly because he took a combat stance, you know, whatever. You got freaking four armed police officers, big men, and they're worried about a bum taking a combat stance. I mean,
yeah, there were
on.
Two of them, but I agree with you. I agree it was an unjustified shooting.
Yeah,
that was back
I mean,
in 1997. Yeah.
And I just seem to get pulled over pretty regularly on my bike. You know, like, a Latino riding around on his bike at night is basically a freaking target. It fits a description, you know, it fits a profile. And I've even been told by an officer, you know, totally off the record, that, yeah, Latino males on bicycles usually are like, you know, will spark a cop's interest. So, I mean, I'm just...
It's your natural rhythm as a Latino dancer, I think.
They're jealous. They ain't got my groove.
Yeah, that's it.
They're freaking jealous, so they're like, oh, I better intimidate this kid and maybe I'll teach him how to dance or something. I don't know.
Dance. Listen, thank you for calling.
No problem. I just thought I wanted to share that night's experiences.
Appreciate that.
Peace.
Bye-bye. You can share your experiences too. 427-3772. Phone lines are open. 427-3772. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm in the studio with Quintus Cornish, who's had some interesting experiences he's been talking about. I'm going to be, hopefully in about half an hour, interviewing Paul Sanford on the Under God case. He's going to Washington to argue before the Supreme Creekies, the Supreme Court. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hold on, let me turn down my radio.
Please.
Yeah, hi, Robert. This is Matthew Hartog.
Hey, Matthew.
So, you were just getting to the interesting part. I didn't realize there was a development in the move-along law. So has it been officially overturned is the bottom line?
Well, it's interesting. It's not clear to me. I think we can assume that it is going to be. Whether the police department is now acting on that basis, I'm not sure. But on Friday, Judge Michael Barton and Steve Argue's case ruled the law was constitutionally defective because, as I was saying, commercial displays are being treated differently than non-commercial displays. So if you're paying money and you're a merchant, you can set up a table for all day long, but there's no such process for doing that if you are not a merchant, if you're just a poor guitar player or political tabler. You yourself, of course, were arrested on one of the same occasions as Steve Argue, and you were dragged off to a squad car. That was in July, right, last summer?
Right, 2 days after the 4th of July, or the day after the 4th of July.
Now, they didn't take your case any further. I think, do you have any idea why they dropped your case? Because you went further than Steve. You sat down and you refused to move. You said, hell with this. I mean, you didn't use those words.
They dropped it because it was obvious that I was testing the law. I hadn't ever been arrested before, so I think they realized that it was a clear case, a clear test case, which would have embarrassed the district attorney's office. They might have taken it a little farther with Steve because I think they've got a read up their ass for Steve Argue, and they'd like to hit him with something. But in my case, they figured it was a no-win situation for them.
Is it because of your medical condition, do you think? Or?
Well, I think that might have played a part in it, my age, my medical condition. You know, they I don't think they thought that the they would have been viewed favorably by a jury.
You're a cancer patient, yes?
Yeah, in remission. I'm going to live a few years longer, I think.
You may live to sit again on a table on the sidewalk. You never can tell.
Yeah, maybe I'm too. But this is interesting because I don't know if a municipal judge can make a constitutional ruling, but he can state in his decision. This might have been his opinion that he states in the decision that the law is constitutionally defective.
Well,
even though this is not the same as, for example, a Supreme Court ruling which actually invalidates or overturns a law.
Well, I believe, first of all, he's a Superior Court judge. All these guys are Superior Court judges. I think they've combined municipal and superior, whatever relevance that has. But, yeah, my understanding is, and it's been done before, though rarely, Superior Court judges can rule a law unconstitutional, and that's where it stands, but only for this jurisdiction. Of course, it's only relevant to this jurisdiction.
It's a municipal code,
you know.
Well, this is the only, since it's a municipal code, this is the only jurisdiction in which that law exists, unless there's some city council somewhere else that's crazy enough to write a law like this.
Right, and it would have, I suppose, if the Capitola City Council wrote such a law, it would be in the same judicial district, and so, or the same state judicial district. What I also said, and you'll find this if you go on the Indie Media website, is I called this a mixed decision, and Steve Argue disagrees with me. He thinks it's a great victory. It is a victory, no question, but I don't regard it as a total victory in the sense of what a decision he announced in the same court session, and that was the decision of Moo the flute player. The flute player, he was playing within 10 feet of a building, and he was ticketed by a Bechtel multiply, I believe, two different occasions. And this is part of the Forbidden Zones Law, which is actually the first section of the same law as the Move-Along Law. It predated the Move-Along Law. The Move-Along Law section was added to the Forbidden Zone. But the same arguments apply. For example, commercial displays don't have to be within 10 feet away from a building. They have to be if they have a permit. And there's no process for having a non-commercial display next to a building and have a permit to do that. So exactly the same arguments could be used, and I think were actually being considered by Barton, though Moo did not have an attorney. Tony Bowl was not acting as his attorney. Moo didn't ask him to do it, and probably should have, and I hope he does in the future, or I hope somebody else does, because Tony did a very good job on that particular thing. And what happened was Barton heard the arguments in Steve Argue's case, the pretrial arguments. He heard Moo's, he actually gave Moo a trial in the same session, and then he postponed both their decisions for a week, saying, I'll give you decisions in a week on both these cases. And Steve Argue found not guilty, charges dismissed, because the law was unconstitutional. Moo, he found guilty with no discussion of the constitutionality of the 10-foot rule at all, even though one would think the same arguments apply. Now, it might be said, A, as I said, Moo didn't have an attorney, and B, Moo did not explicitly make these arguments about constitutionality. So
it's the difference I can see is that playing a flute is not a constitutionally, according to standard, you know, law, is not constitutionally protected like free speech is.
Well, you see, it's not, I hear what you're saying, but that's another kind of peculiarity of this case. Tony Bowl did not make oral arguments about the nature of the free speech issue and how it was, you know, so important in this situation. I think he did make some arguments in his brief, which I've not yet read, about the vagueness of the law. But the issue was essentially whether commercial speech and non-commercial speech are treated alike. And for the purposes of this situation, music playing is artistic speech in the sense, if you're not talking about excessive volume, it is a situation where are standing with a musical instrument. Actually, it wasn't even the music. It's just being there with a display device at all. in a non-commercial type activity, whether it's political, artistic, social, or just begging for spare change, is covered now by this. Can't do it within 10 feet of a building, 10 feet of a bench, 10 feet of a kiosk, 10 feet of a curb, 10 feet of a crosswalk, 10 feet of a telephone, 10 feet of a drinking fountain. And because of that, you can, on the other hand, have a commercial thing sitting in any of those places in any of those locations with a permit. But there's no permit process to do the other ones. It's exactly the same argument, even though we're talking about, I agree with you, flute playing is not quite equivalent to giving out political literature. But still, they're both non-commercial activities.
It still should be protected, and obviously the judge. So if the judge was deciding this, was the flute player charged as a misdemeanor or what?
No,
or
both Steve and the flute player were, when they finally got into court, charged as infractions. They dumped Steve originally was charged with misdemeanors, but the city attorney, realizing that Steve had legal defense, they used the misdemeanor to put him in jail, but then having done that and done the maximum punishment they could, and they had booked him, held him, finally released him, they didn't want to give him the paid public defender and the jury trial that the misdemeanor would allow him to have. So they reduced it to an infraction under a new city code, which was passed in 2000, which allows what would normally be misdemeanors to be reduced at the discretion of the city attorney to an infraction.
Okay. Listen, Robert, I guess you're going to have Steve on at some point. So
I tried to call Steve a few minutes ago. His number didn't answer. He's certainly welcome to come on, and he did come on briefly, as you know, earlier, talking about this other issue with Aquinas. So hopefully, yeah.
Okay. Well, it's been good talking to you, and I will continue to listen.
See you on Pacific Avenue.
Thank you.
All right. So you're tuned to 96.3, and we got open phone lines, 427-3772. Let's hear a few more interviews from the streets, and then we will be back with, an update on upcoming city council meeting and then discussion of the under God decision or ruling. But before we do, let's take this phone call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Just glad we got you on the air. You probably heard Matthew calling in.
Yeah. I think that it's very clear what this ruling was. It was a ruling that this law is unconstitutional, and Judge Barton will put that in writing on April 2nd at the request of the city attorney. So this overturns the law, and it overturns the law that, if Moo's being prosecuted on the move along, then it overturns the law that Moo was being prosecuted on. I thought it was something having to do with how many feet from the building.
No, that's correct. He is being prosecuted under the 10-foot rule, but
right,
if you look at the law, the 10-foot rule is the first part of the move-along.
Okay.
It's part one and part two.
So that was an entirely different case, and this is part of the point I'm trying to make to you, is that, and you keep misrepresenting it, and I don't say this to get down on you, but I do think it's important to recognize our victories when we have them. Moo's case, I support Moo, but what happened in court to Moo was an entirely different case. And you say it like, the judge said, I'll hear both cases. The judge never said, I'll hear both cases. He said he did my case, and then later, as he went through cases, he got to Moo's cases. Or Moo's case on the flute. So these are entirely different cases. Just because they happen in the same courtroom on the same day doesn't mean that we amalgamate them into one case.
The
reason why you do it, I don't understand actually. Because what we've done here is we've overturned a law, an unconstitutional law here in Santa Cruz. Now on that same day, there were probably people prosecuted for sleeping. There were people prosecuted for many things that we disagree with in the courtrooms of Santa Cruz County. And to say that what happened to me was not a victory because of what was happening to these other people in the American capitalist courtrooms, I think it's silly.
Steve, let me clarify why I said that. I call it a mixed victory. I didn't say it wasn't a victory.
A mixed victory when you're not recognizing the fact that Moose case is separate.
Well, let me clarify. let me clarify why I connect the cases. First of all, the week before, your case and his case were heard one after the other. And what he said was...
No, they weren't, actually. My case was heard, and then there were other cases heard, and eventually it got to Moose case.
They were completely separate cases. But I know that what he said was, he instead of announcing an immediate verdict in Moose case, he said, I'll rule in your case at the same time as I rule in Steve's case in a week, at the same time.
Oh, he said that to Moose?
That's what he said.
Well, I had to get going. I wasn't there for Moose case, which was a separate case.
Right.
The reason
I mention it is because the same arguments that Tony Boal uses applies exactly to Moose case.
Well, the problem is, in a court, if you don't make the argument to the judge, then they don't apply.
Except that, remember, the judge could have said guilty right then, but he took it under submission for a week, so I think he was too concerned about the fact that Moo's case really had the same commercial, non-commercial problem.
Okay, well...
That was the reason I mentioned it. I wasn't saying it wasn't a victory. I mean, congratulations again, Steve, on doing that.
The thing is those arguments need to be made, and that, you know, if the arguments aren't made, then you can't... the judge should know the law, but actually... More often than not, you need to argue the law with the judge, and you need to present the law in order to win your case. And that's why people need lawyers. Unfortunately, a lot of people aren't provided the legal assistance they need. You know,
that's true.
And it is usually justice to the highest bidder, and no justice for most people. But I think that this puts more people than just myself in a good position in not being brought into the courtrooms for a stupid law that violates rights.
Definitely.
I'm afraid,
as I've told you, that we got to keep our eyes on the council, because I'm afraid they're going to do some fast footwork here.
But the thing is that now we're in a position where if they try to force something now, like everybody has to get a permit in order to do free speech, well, that's another violation of the First Amendment of the Constitution, which can be challenged again in a different way. So they're being put in a harder spot because of the stuff they're doing, and pressure is being put on them. So it's a victory.
That's good. I agree.
Okay.
Hey, congratulations again.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I mean, I want to point out that Steve and Tony persisted in this case 9 months after the original arrest. It's taking a long time. There's also a case coming up of Bajani Romero, by the way, this week, a trial. I believe it's a trial. Maybe my producer can get back to me on this. And the famous to me, probably unknown to everybody else, but except for listeners to this show, the jaywalking massacre, as I call it, that happened downtown in, I guess it was July of 2003, when police used 8 squad cars, 5 of them blocking Pacific Avenue, 13 to 15 police officers, to harass a deaf man jaywalking across the street from between Borders and the Gap. And essentially it was an attack on the kids in front of Borders, again, sort of making them pay, making them, penalizing them, punishing them for being present and for essentially standing up to police authority when the police went after a deaf jam, as he's called. I don't think he's in town anymore. You may remember him. He was a deaf man who used to hang with the kids at Borders. Bajani Romero was arrested for jaywalking and interfering with an officer in this huge brouhaha about nothing, which essentially was a large police presence downtown to intimidate people. And that happened in mid-July of 2003 and now goes to court. I'm trying to get the more specific information about that case later in the show. I just remembered it. Bajani is thoroughly sick of this case, and every time I bring it up, he kind of wants to turn the other way. And I appreciate that, but he has carried out, like Steve carried on with the help. His carrying on with the case has been with the help of a public defender. Usually, I call them public pretenders, but in some cases, they are, you know, well, they're the only defense a person has who has a misdemeanor. Actually, Steve kind of help Steve got from Tony, he wouldn't have gotten a public defender because this is an infraction, whereas by Johnny, who's a homeless person, is being charged with a misdemeanor, essentially part of this whole attempt to justify what the police department is doing and make sure, I suppose, that no lawsuits are filed because they can win some prosecution here. It's pretty cheesy stuff, and I'll get back to you on it. In case I don't get more information on Bajani Romero during this show, you can give me a call on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's my voicemail, also the number for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, Huff, off air, and I'll get back to you. And I'll try to post something on that line if I can get more information about it prior to court trial, which could be as early as tomorrow and probably as Tuesday, unless I'm thinking it's the week after next and it's just trial readiness this week. I'm not sure. So let's hear a little more from the streets. And again, if you want to call in, you can talk to me. Quintus is still here, faithfully hanging in, keeping an ear on things, so to speak. 427-3772. It's about 8:20. I'm here at the homeless table, or I should say the Huff table, in front of Borders. We're talking with tabler extraordinaire Michael. Michael, how you enjoyed the tabling?
Yes, it was a good evening. We had a lot of feedback, another 20 or so signatures. We interviewed a gal that recently got arrested for... There she is, speaking of the dear soul herself, just recently got arrested for being within 50 feet of a change machine, and she was, like, not even bothering anybody, doing anything, I thought.
We got a ticket for sitting or panhandling, one of the two.
It was sitting, it seemed like she said, yeah.
Any hassles from your favorite officer, Bechtel?
No, actually, the whole evening was uneventful from the legal standpoint. So
any police come by?
Not that I could notice or that I saw, no.
We hear a xylophone across the street. I noticed an illegally placed xylophone within 10 feet of a building, and there seems to be a nice crowd of onlookers enjoying the playing in front of Cottontails. How long have they been playing?
Oh, they've been actually going for a good half hour, I'd say.
Oh, now they're going to violate two laws. The move-along law is soon going to be violated. Of course, you've been here for more than an hour. Been here for 2 hours.
Yeah.
So you, too, are a criminal move-along person. You know, I mean, what the hell? Why don't you move along?
Well, we're fortunate not to be in the, agenda or the quota of tonight's policing. I guess they just have business elsewhere, and you just fortunate to be all right, I guess.
Well, thanks again for your work here, Michael. Any observations about what you saw that you think people might want to know?
Well, other than a few people are going to be interested in manning the table on Sunday morning show, so we're real excited about that. We're going to keep on Wednesday and Thursday and hopefully have some people on Sunday.
Good work. Keep up the good work, Michael.
Okay. Thanks, Robert.
Sir, you just signed this petition. What is your name?
This is Hot Rod John Rapport.
And we're going to go to Hot Rod John Rapport in just a minute, but we have a caller. Hi, caller.
Hi, Richard Oxen here. Thanks, Robert.
Hey, Richard. Sorry about the levels there. Go ahead.
What I'd like to do is I'd like to have all the listeners who can take the time to send me, I'll give you two different ways to do it, to send me short, clear, concise sentences, maybe 5 to 10, okay, but keep them short, please, and right to the point, and don't have them duplicate each other. Complaints about Santa Cruz, you know, including the sleeping ban, of course, things about Santa Cruz that make it something other than the so-called progressive city it pretends to be. I want to give this I think I have an opportunity to give it national attention. And so if you email me a list, and it could be one if you want, at mail, M-A-I-L, at onedancesummit.org. That's onedancesummit.org. Or if you're not on a computer, you can send it to Oxman, O-X-M-A-N, at Post Office Box 7428, That's Post Office Box 7428 in Santa Cruz, 95061. So Robert, thank you very much for what you're doing, and thanks to the listeners for listening, and I hope to hear from you all.
Richard, one more time, what's the email?
The email is mail, M-A-I-L, at onedancesummit.org.
One Dance Summit is O-N-E-D-A-N-C-E-S-U-M-M-I-T.
.org, right.
Okay.
Okay, and I'll get back to people and appreciate it. It can be just one complaint, you know, but keep it short, keep it clear, keep it concise so we can make it easy to read, a quick read, and, you know, that sort of thing. I'll try to pick out the 10
and people can read your stuff on www.
What's that?
People can read your writing recently on...
Oh, thanks. There's a new piece I think is really... on a lot of it's on Press Action, www.pressaction.com. PressAction.com. There's a new piece you might want to see about the March 20th march yesterday, and tying in some of the problems Chomsky created with his statements about Kerry. So you might want to read it about why the thanks, Robert. Why the March 20th will fail?
Do you have any? Did you get to the march yourself, or you actually were critical of the march? Did you ever actually?
I'm critical of the march long before leading up to the march. You know, United for Peace and Justice is doing a great disservice to the movement. Even though, you know, organizing anything by way of a march has its positive benefits and should be applauded in a certain sense. The you know, like Patrice Jones says on that same website, she's been saying for a long time about marching in circles. Marches have become part of a, to quote the Situationist, Guy Laborde, a spectacle, you know, just spectacle where we have come to sit back, expect it, and watch it, and not expect anything more than that.
It doesn't energize people to make the kind of changes that they need to make.
Yeah, we need new paradigms for action. And they're going to have to be in the mode of things that are not allowed, you know, beyond the parameters that the law allows. Otherwise, there's not going to be any major change. But I hope people will check out that, I'm glad you brought it up, that PressAction.com set of pieces there, one of which is by me, or a few of which are by me.
Hey, well, thank you, Richard. And,
thank you. Looking forward to getting that email or, you know, letters.
Yeah, send your complaints to Richard at mail@onedancesummit.org.
Thank you, Robert. Good luck.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I was at the march yesterday up in San Francisco. I'm actually going to be playing some tape on it, although I don't know how much time I'm going to have since the show only lasts for another hour and 10 minutes, and we have other stuff scheduled. But I know one complaint I had. I didn't follow the route of the march. I carried signs walking down alternate streets, and I had the thought that one way to get, I think, more... awareness, at least in the communities we were walking through, would be to have people break up into smaller groups and go through side streets with signs and so forth. And I thought it was a brilliant idea, actually. I didn't know why it hadn't been done. And then I'll converge on the Civic Center Plaza, where there was quite a collection of people. Some organizers there said, 20 to 50,000, I heard, and then police said a few thousand, certainly more than that. A lot of good speakers. You probably can follow it on other stations. I'm sure that it got some media coverage elsewhere, and I don't have to cover it specifically, but I do have some interviews that came out of it. One of them, as I mentioned, Andrea Pritchard's interview, a Berkeley Cop Watch organizer, and I'm going to be playing that probably on Thursday or next Sunday, because I don't think I'm going to have time today to play that. Now let's hear a little more from the Santa Cruz streets. Here's Hot Rod.
This petition you signed is a petition to restore civil rights. Are you saying that civil rights somehow need restoration in Santa Cruz?
Yes, absolutely. I've been in this town since 89. I'm from South Chicago. I'm 52 years old. I'm a white male, and I have nothing to hide. I'm not into drugs and alcohol or disturbance. I'm respectable. I keep the peace. The bottom line is, even this morning, I was by the jailhouse under a bush. I'm a diabetic, type 2, and I have a lot of medical issues. The bottom line is I got officer was called, and somehow or other I was too close to the jailhouse fence, and I was setting off alarms.
Oh, offensive positioning, body positioning.
Yeah.
So you were, in fact, a terrorist threat, clearly.
Somewhat, but the policeman that showed up has known me for about the past, I'd say 8 years. And
what's his name?
I forgot, but... right now, I'm just grateful I got some food. Somebody just handed me a bag of lunch, and I signed the petition, and I'm in a better mood than I was last night because I got heated up by the heat and the sun. Today was cooler, so I'm more lively. And I can't take the heat, and I can't be in the landscape with the bugs. If I get infected, I got to go on antibiotics, serious. So the bottom line is, the police gave me 48 hours to eliminate my stuff and myself from in that location, or I'd be getting another second violation and then directly to go to jail.
So you've got one ticket already for this?
Just this morning.
What was it for?
It's called a permanent campsite.
Oh, and camping ban section C.
And this isn't the first time. I'm trying not to hide and be a nuisance because it's just impossible. I get $900 a month through Social Security because I worked in a steel mill in South Chicago for 8 years, from high school till I got... anyway, it's a long story and it's a short life. But I love you and I wish you all the best because I mean very well and I'm dying trying, to say the least.
Thank you, Hot Rod.
Yes, thank you.
Robert Patton, you are with the Human Rights Organization, and you've been hanging out at this table. Does this mean you formed a coalition with Huff? What's going on here? Are you are two organizations operating in concert here? Tell me the truth.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, the reputation that Robert Norris and Huff has, I mean, that's such a hot potato. There wouldn't be any organization that would be willing to even get close to them.
Thank God we have some sensible minds left.
It's a volunteer membership with Huff and a paid membership with the Human Rights Organization.
How long have you been down here?
Today, you're asking?
Yes.
Well, it's at 7 o'clock, listening to your program. That's that great music with
Danielle Savage.
Danielle Savage, and what a name, huh?
She's out here on the streets. You can hear her play for free, and she's just wonderful. She even plays at the safe events, too.
Those events have turned out to be really nice. I'm glad that's still happening and looking forward to being there next week. And I've been able to part of the... I'm filling my requirements for membership in the Human Rights Organization, too, because you have to put at least 1 hour of work each week towards these issues or something, some other issues that you feel would be applicable to... as your commitment.
Cool. Thank you, Bob.
So I'm taking advantage of you.
We're talking with... They're backing off. You want to talk about your experience being hassled with police?
Not really right now, just because of the fact that we're on kind of a time schedule.
Sure, another time. And we've been talking to...
First name only. Justin.
Thanks, Justin, and thanks for your signature. Talking with...
Lauren Noland.
Lauren, you just signed this petition to restore civil rights. Why is that?
Because I'm just tired of seeing the police kicking people out of certain areas that they're allowed to be in. This is the earth, and they're just sleeping. They're not doing anything wrong, and I'm tired of people getting rousted for sleeping. It's their right to sleep. So let them sleep in peace and don't wake them up.
And you just signed it too. What's your name?
Jennifer.
Why are you signing these petitions? Are you just following the lead of this questionable individual here?
No, I just think that everybody has a right to be able to sleep wherever they feel. As long as they're not causing any trouble, I don't see why this should be a problem.
Thank you both.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Talking with... Well, let's say anonymous. Now,
okay,
but you have some concerns about the... You said there's an issue that has a number of different aspects to it.
Well, I don't know. I think it poses a hazard in terms of waste, like, that they create.
We're talking about trailers out on...
It's that road over by Natural Bridges.
the folks parked out there.
Yeah, it was a while ago when I saw it on the news, but it's just...
This is Richard latest favorite. It never stops with you, mister, well, I tell you.
One of my fans and well-wishers, your name, sir?
Edward Levy.
And Edward, are you still engaging in questionable dramatic activity?
Whenever possible.
Thank you, man.
What is this? On the street, sir, are you on Atkins now? You look like you shed a few there.
I'm trying to get laid, and I'll tell you, people have these prejudices against us chunky guys. I dislike it.
I like the chunky guys.
Now we're talking. You're coming with me.
The chunky guys got what I want, maybe.
All right. Now, will you please sign in for all the chunky men out there? What is your name, madam?
My name is Kat.
So if you want, look for the cat if you want to get an appropriate scratch.
You got to be chunky everywhere, though.
Chunky in the heart, chunky in the head, that sort of
thing. And elsewhere.
Have you signed the petition to restore civil rights to homeless people?
Old people check it out.
Well, it's about 10:15 in front of Borders, and we're talking with...
You're talking with Free.
And Free. What news? You're having a little ice cream, munching a cookie, and your backpack safely at your side as you sit on this bench, and you have some concerns.
Yes, I'm trying to figure out why I was harassed over at Bookshop Santa Cruz a couple of months ago. I was 86 for some basically pretty unjust reasons, and the guy that saw me come use the bathroom maybe a month later from that point, called the cops on me. They came and gave me a ticket for trespassing, and it sounds pretty bogus to me.
Now, tell us the story, the circumstances of your expulsion from the bookshop. How did that happen?
Well, at the time, I had a backpack, and it had a spiritual message on it, and I guess he got a little offended, and he pointed me out and said, "You crazy one, get out of the store and don't come back."
What was the spiritual message?
It said, "Jesus loves you."
And who was the individual who took umbrage at this?
I don't know his name, but I recognize his face.
What did he look like?
He looked like he was Spanish or Puerto Rican descent.
How old?
Roughly about maybe 25, 27, somewhere around there.
Behind the counter? Or?
Yes, he was.
And what did he say to you?
He came up with another person about as tall as myself. I'm about 6'1", and he said, "You're going to have to leave. I told you about coming to the store," and he made up this fabricated story.
What story did you say?
He said, "I told you before about coming to the store and being crazy in here, and it's time for you to leave," and I was just sitting down reading a book.
And had you ever seen this guy before?
Never in my life.
Had anyone warned you about being crazy in the bookstore?
Not one time.
Well, why do you think it had to do with Jesus loves you?
Maybe he doesn't like Jesus. I don't know.
Right, but maybe he doesn't like your color. Maybe he doesn't like your ice cream. I mean, why would it be that Jesus loves you?
I really don't know what his motive was behind.
Why would you say it was you pointed to the idea? Do you think it specifically was the Jesus loves you? You think it might have been something else? Or?
I believe that's all it was, because that I wasn't loud or. You know, offensive in any way, or
did he refer to that logo, or did he say anything about it?
No, he didn't refer to it, but he kept looking at it and staring at it as he was telling me to get out of the store.
I see. And so, what was your response?
You're all crazy.
I asked him if I could see the manager. And he said, "There's no need to see the manager. He's in agreement with me."
And did you ever go back to try to appeal this decision?
No, I didn't. I couldn't get any further than. Just that particular clerk.
Did you go back at one point later, or did you just gave up on trying to do it?
I just gave up on trying to do it, because every time I tried to come in there, he would just chase me out.
So how many times after that subsequently did you try to approach the management?
I approached the management at least two separate times within a two-month period, and I got the same response from them.
When was the approximate date of your expulsion? Which month?
It was... 2 months ago, roughly.
So it was January?
About.
And what's happened recently that's brought this matter of concern up? You have a court date for trespass?
Yes, I do, in about maybe two more weeks.
Did
Did he at any time ask you to leave and you refused to leave?
No, that was the only time that he asked me to leave was when he pointed me out with someone that he had brought with him that particular incident.
I suppose he would say that when you went back to use the bathroom that you were trespassing, that was his claim.
Right.
Well, I would encourage you to, as I would to any other listeners, to, if you have a court date on an issue like this, give a call to HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. You'll get a public defender for this because this is a misdemeanor. And then get back to us. Maybe come to a HUF meeting. We meet every Wednesday at 8:30 at Baker Square at 1107 Ocean Street. I'll give you a card.
Thank you. I'd appreciate that.
All right. What name are you known under in the court so we can follow the kids?
Okay. My given name is Malcolm Andrew Barth.
Last name is spelled?
B-A-R-T-H.
Thank you. And good luck to you.
Thank you, sir.
And there is a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday. It's begins with a closed litigation session at 1:30. There's a Santa Cruz Public Improvement Financing Corporation session at 2:50, which I guess that's another incarnation of the city council. And then they expect 10 minutes later, city council begins its afternoon session at 3 o'clock. And that's at City Hall at 809 Center Street, right across from the main library. And then there's another session at 7 o'clock. I'm looking over the agenda for those who are interested in this situation. There's a long, not that long, but there is a, actually it's pretty short, a 9-item consent agenda, which means if you want to talk about items on the city council agenda, you have to be there at 3 o'clock and say, I want to pull that item off the agenda and talk about it. If Kennedy and Rotkin don't like you, they will say, okay, we'll talk about that at the end of the evening or at the end of the agenda. They may put it at the end of the evening, in which case you'll either have to set up camp and sleep for the next 4 hours to the rest of the city council meeting to get your chance, have someone listening so they know when the item comes up, or give up your opportunity to speak because of the disregarding of the Brown Act's rights of people to use to speak at public meetings and have access into agenda items on public agendas. But Kennedy and Rotkin are excellent at that kind of subverting of the Constitution while smiling and making like they're the most progressive folks in town. The items on the city council agenda coming up, there's the minutes of the meeting, which I occasionally take off and talk about. There's also the living wage resolution indexing the prescribed minimum living wage rate by 1.1% up, responding to going up from $11.77 to $12.84 per hour. I got no commentary on that one because I've not been following it, but some folks might be interested. There is a huge biogasoline and biodiesel award, not mentioned in the agenda, but it is mentioned in the secondary documentation. This is going to cost a total of I'm thinking of the next item. I think this is only $14,000. Only $14,000. Actually, it is. It's a cooperative online reverse auction with cities of San Jose and Sunnyvale and Santa Clara for a one-year contract on gasoline, diesel, and biodiesel fuels from Orbis Online, Inc. in Texas. And it enables them, presumably, to get lower prices on the gas. I guess the savings they claim is $14,000. It's not clear if there are costs involved in this. Usually they mention costs. And, of course, a question for those bicycle advocates and people concerned with the use of oil, and I'm one of them users of oil. I drive my car all over the place. You might want to inquire the city how many vehicles they use, how much gas they use a day, what the circumstances are in which they use those vehicles. That would be interesting information. Not particularly my neck of the woods, but it might be somebody's. There's also sort of some standard stuff, which I'm not going to go into, or not really standard stuff, wastewater treatment facilities, regulations to reduce greenhouse gases, a number of other things. And then on the administrative business, also on the afternoon agenda, there's the Corporation Yard Master Plan. Again, I'm not too conversant with it, just looked at the document today, but it is going to be costing us $2.17 million. It's to engage in Corporation Yard improvements funded through a variety of enterprise and general fund sources. And this is currently plans for moving parking control to a downtown facility. Water enterprise funds are budgeted for its expansion, locker room improvements, soon to be in the vacated parking control area. When I hear parking, I see red because of the permit parking stuff. But again, this sounds like a lot of money. If anybody were interested, they might want to look into this. Corporation Yard Master Plan, again, that will be coming up without people pulling it off the agenda. It's already going to be a separate item. No doubt all this stuff will be rubber stamped through. Then there's another item to finance the golf course. They're going to issue sale of certificates of participation not to exceed $5.5 million to finance $3.7 million in golf course improvements and fund the cost of issuance and related costs. $1.7 million to refinance a prior refuse fund certificate of participation to create interest rate savings. And amend the fiscal year 2004 golf fund budget in the amount of $2,700,000. Golf fund budget. Now, I'll no doubt be told by Vice Mayor Rotkin with a smile that all this money could not be used for homeless people or anybody else. It's totally separate funding, has nothing to do with social services. Couldn't keep it Loudoun Nelson Center open with it, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I leave it for you out there to look into. But there it is on the agenda coming up on Tuesday on the afternoon agenda, items 10 and 11, $2.7 million for the Corporation Yard and $5.5 million for the certificates of participation for golf course improvements. Resolution transfers funds, amends the golf budget in the amount of $2.7 million. So I don't know. Find out and tell me. There's also some resolutions on politically correct courses, like resolution supporting the March for Women's Lives. Approve of that. Marriage equality, supporting the rights of gays to marry. And then the evening, there are a couple of zoning things. What is that? There's a public hearing on what's called a mitigated negative declaration and design permit for, looks like, a new apartments, which I don't have much information on. And there's also oral communications. And I believe activist Bob Patton is going to be speaking at the city council on Tuesday. He was the man you heard speaking earlier on the tape at the homeless Huff table. He's with a group called the Human Rights Organization, and he's been working pretty steadily with SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, the group that has Wednesday night sing-alongs and sing-outs in front of New Leaf Market. And he is going to be speaking on the issues that have been coming up around homeless issues. He's going to be talking about calling people who are stuck in, you know, almost killed in dumpsters stupid, not expanding shelter, mayors engaging in continuing exclusion of the sleeping ban from any kind of agenda, the general issues around police abuse, perhaps. It's the issues that don't get talked about at City Council, I think Bob Patton's going to try to talk about, certainly some of them as they impact homeless people, at 7 o'clock on Tuesday night. So you might want to either tune into your TV if you have cable TV access, come to City Council to hear it, or come on down and talk about it yourself. I may or may not be there. I'm not sure. I am plenty sick of City Council, I can tell you that. What else we got here? I am scanning ahead. Let's hear a little more of them street interviews, then I'll give a call to Paul Sanford, who is going away to Washington, D.C., to try to make sure that we get the right to be able to say the Pledge of Allegiance without tipping the Pope or the Protestant churches as we go. Sorry about that. I thought we had that properly queued up. Let's hear a little musical break while I fumble with the equipment.
To be that way. Was it alcohol or carelessness or punishment for sins. But she seems so unaware of her decay. Somewhere beneath the numbness of her homeless miseries, near the long forgotten sound of her own name, a distant memory of being sung to sleep at night. In her dreams recalls it, then it slips away. Sing me one song, one time, like a morning dove. Sing me one song, one more time. Sing me one song, one time, like a mama's love. Sing me one song, one more time. Way down at the bottom of a dirty shopping bag, wrapped in neatly folded borrowed paper towels, a photograph of someone some old faded time ago. Why she keeps it is Queen Mary's secret now. Sing me one song, one time, like a morning dove. Sing me one song, one more time. Sing me one song, one time, like a mama's love. Sing me one song, one more time. Queen Mary wakes beneath the bench out by the boulevard. She thought she heard her mother call her name. She thinks she might be crazy, but she's never really sure. Trapped between the anger and the shame. Sing me one song, one time, like a morning dove. Sing me one song, one more time. Sing me one song, one time, like a mama's love. Sing me one song, one more time. Sing me one song, one time, like a morning dove. Sing me one song, one more time. Sing me one song, one time, like a mama's love. Sing me one song, one more
time. And that was another selection from Ann Feeney. This is Free Radio, 96.3, 101.1, www.freakradio.org, and 427-3772, if you want to call in, 427-3772. A quick announcement, we were going to have hopefully an update from Andrea Tischler, Andrea Tischler, actually. She's with the Bed, Bud, and Breakfast Compassion Flower Inn, who's been researching and working with, or working on, and perhaps working with the Board of Stupid Vipers, I'm sorry, Board of Supervisors, including Supervisor Marty Wormhout, on getting some more generous guidelines for medical marijuana than are currently allowed by the state or are currently mandated by the state under AB 420, or is it SB 420? Anyway, it's whatever it is, that law that was passed recently, numbered 420. And apparently she's going to have an announcement for us next Sunday, so hold on to your buds and hang tough, and we'll get more information from her then. She's busy today, just got back from a trip. I'm going to be playing shortly, or turning shortly, to Paul Sanford, who I mentioned, who is going to be arguing an amicus brief, a friend of the court brief in Washington, D.C., before that group of thugs that inaugurated George Bush, the Supreme Court. He's going to be arguing for American atheists, and he actually was good enough to give me a copy of his brief in the issue of The Under God, Should the Little Kiddies Be Forced to Do It by State-Mandated in state-mandated schools and in a public educational system, should you have to say under God? And should the people be, should we be leading these religious exercises? And of course, you obviously know my opinion based on how I'm describing it. Michael Newdow, who's challenging it, had a presentation about 2 months ago in Monterey at the College of the Law, where there was a kind of group of lawyers and other teachers representing Supreme Court officials who did a kind of a mock Supreme Court hearing. And I recorded that and played some of it, and it was pretty bad recording, but we got some of that out on the air a couple months ago. I also did some interviews afterward. I'm going to play those, some of that now, anticipating Paul Sanford's call coming in, and we'll take it from there, and hopefully this will be of some interest.
In the Marsh case, as far as what the Establishment Clause means, I would say, yes, that's true. There's nothing that talks about the purposes of the Establishment Clause as far as why we have congressional chaplains. I think the idea of being from tax dollars
talking about
to people
that
stand in front of the Congress
recording.
And the legislature,
he's responding to inquiries from the Supreme Court,
and say that we should worship God is completely antithetical. James Madison said the same thing, but as you know, this is not before the court.
Now, I'm curious about your viewpoint. What test to apply? Clearly, in March, they didn't apply the Lemon test that existed at the time. They didn't apply it. This court didn't apply that test in that case. And the Ninth Circuit refers to three different tests and merging those three tests. What kind of test of the Establishment Clause question would you say it should be applied?
I think any of the tests could be applied. And if you apply any of the tests.
But before we get into the tests, we unfortunately, or fortunately, have a phone call. Hi, you're on the air, caller.
Good afternoon, Reverend Norris. Paul Sanford here.
You are the notorious atheistic dog who's going to attempt to flush the deity out of our school system. How can you face yourself in the morning?
That's quite well said, Robert. I'm working through it. I'm in therapy.
Well, there you are, a man who's struggling with his conscience. Paul Sanford, you're an attorney locally who's actually been able to stop the harassment of John Maurer on the street for his fuck the pigs sign in his hat, as say, trying to have a basic protest against police misconduct in rather earthy language.
Yeah, of course, that case isn't over yet, we hope. We're hoping that it's going to, expecting that it's going to proceed to the next level so that we can do more than just protect Mr. Maurer from his past harassment by the authorities, but to try to get an unconstitutional statute off of the books.
Well, you're actually going after bigger game, I guess, what is it, next week when you go to the Supreme Court?
Yeah, Wednesday is when the case of Elk Grove Unified School District versus Michael Newdow is on the Supreme Court's calendar, Wednesday, 10 o'clock East Coast time, and that's the gentleman who is asserting that the words under God were unconstitutionally engrafted upon the Pledge of Allegiance in 1954.
Will the revolution be televised?
Well, unfortunately not. The court not only doesn't allow cameras. It doesn't allow any type of live broadcast. They're still back in the 18th century in terms of public access.
You're going to sneak a hand recorder in there to record everything?
I was thinking about it, but then on balance, I think it's such an honor to be admitted to practice before the United States Supreme Court that I choose not to jeopardize that by directly violating their rules on my first visit as a member of the Supreme Court bar.
Uh-huh. This is the same Supreme Court that gave us the fine leader who is leading us to victory in Iraq, as I remember.
Well, it is kind of ironic, you know, that the one thing that this court is known for, the Rehnquist Court is known for, is breathing life back into the antiquated doctrine that states have rights and that the federal government is not all-powerful. And the great irony is that in the one case, the biggest case they ever had, they allowed the federal government to take over a state election. So it's a terrific irony and quite a sad commentary on the political nature of this court. But frankly, practically all of the Supreme Courts and all courts embodied anywhere are political by nature, and there's no point in pretending otherwise.
Well, then why are you bothering to go to Washington since this is a seriously political issue? Under God was originally put in the Constitution to stop the godless commies in 1954, right?
That's right. The pledge was in existence for at least 60 years before that. Those words weren't included. This was just a political... This is the height of McCarthyism in one of the saddest, most shameful periods of our country's history, and this is one example of the lengths to which dissent was suppressed. And there's no constitutional value in it. It should not even be a close case in terms of the First Amendment, but political considerations may dictate otherwise. We'll have to see how many justices are willing to stand up and be counted in this matter.
Probably the fingers of one hand will do, probably.
Well, it's interesting. Mr. Newdow only needs four votes. There are five normally you need five, but Justice Scalia has recused himself from this matter, which he, of course, should have done in the Dick Cheney case. I think one of the reasons he's knocked back down from the case with his hunting buddy and social acquaintance is that Scalia is already embarrassed. He's been forced to withdraw from perhaps the most celebrated case of the term, which is this Pledge of Allegiance case, and now to be forced to step aside again is so, I think, unnerving for him that he's drawn a very pathetic line in the sand.
This case has been percolating since when?
It's been going on for a matter of years. I don't know the direct onset of it. Mr. Newdow is he's a brave and a brilliant guy, and he is concerned about the violations of the separation of church and state on many different levels. He doesn't believe in God. We trust should be on our coins. I think he's got a strong point there, and so forth. This case has been going on for at least two or three years, though, the pledge issue.
Well, I know a lot of questions were posed by law professors and some jurists who were assembled by you down at the Monterey, College of the Law,
mm-hmm.
in order to kind of give Mr. Newdow a workout, anticipating the kinds of inquiries he would be getting from the Supreme Court, the kind of cross-examination and so forth. What do you think were the hardest questions he received and he's likely to get from the Supreme Court?
Well, I think the hardest questions are likely to do with his standing, whether he, in fact, is allowed to bring this case before the court. And the reason for that is this case, you know, he's not really alleging that he's the party injured. It's his daughter who's injured by being forced to recite this oath and this allegiance to the monotheistic approach, to religion. And as a result, the court may try to duck this issue if they're not sure that they're going to get the five votes they need to stop Newdow. Because since he won in the Ninth Circuit, if the court doesn't overrule what the Ninth Circuit did, then that will become the law of the country. In other words, under God will be eliminated from the pledge, at least in terms of where it's recited in the schools. the hardest thing is they may try to duck and say, look, you're the wrong person to bring this suit. One, it's your child who's injured and not you. And secondly, he's involved in a custody dispute concerning this kind child. And they may determine, because Mr. Newdow only has custody 10 days a month instead of and not 15 and not 30, that perhaps the mother would be the proper person to bring the case. It's an arcane thing, but courts don't give advisory opinions, and they do not rule on cases where there's not an actual case or controversy that's affecting the individual who sued. And they may decide that the Ninth Circuit was wrong in even hearing the case because Mr. Newdow does not have to have standing to bring it. I think that would be sad and pathetic because it just means we'll have to wait several more years until a more appropriate plaintiff comes along. The court's got the opportunity. It's not unlike what we see in local jurisprudence here when some of our commissioners and judges, when faced with the opportunity to rule on the constitutionality of local ordinances, punt, to use the football phrase, and decline that opportunity when they could clear up controversies. It's a way sometimes of just hiding, if you will.
Let me kind of play Dodo's advocate, so to speak.
Not again.
Well, I tried to do the extinction thing. Isn't Mr. Newdow trying to censor poor school children who simply want to speak their feelings and their minds when they say under God?
No, there would be nothing nothing that would prohibit a school child from adding a word or two or seven to the pledge as they recite it. What we're concerned about is that you're talking about kindergartners, first graders, second graders, extremely impressionable individuals. I questioned the propriety of requiring them to stand up and pledge allegiance to the flag in the first place. But when we do that and we include pledging allegiance and affirming their faith in God, and then you figure in a public school child's career, it's going to be over 2,000 times that the teacher orders them to stand up and be indoctrinated. I think the pledge itself is of questionable value when you force 5- and 6- and 7-year-olds to do it. And I think nothing in this would prohibit people from having their own religious viewpoints. What we don't want to do is coerce people who aren't perhaps in the mainstream, children or otherwise, who don't happen to believe in God. We don't want to coerce them to being forced to either sit down or leave the room or somehow, which will further isolate them and separate them from the rest of their classmates. It's unfair. Why would we put a young child in such an untenable position? And to what end? It's not about patriotism. The words God, under God, have nothing to do with patriotism. The pledge was fine before McCarthyism and fine before the Congress changed it. We should go back to the time when people were allowed to have their own viewpoints and have them be respected and not be coerced into these terrible divisive situations that serve no legitimate academic purpose or even social purpose, to my understanding.
Now, wasn't there another court ruling in another jurisdiction other than the Ninth that found that under God was constitutional?
I'm not aware. The court in dicta, which is not binding precedent, but in comments in various court opinions, some justices have indicated that's their view of the law. But there is no binding legal case law that deals with this issue, and that's why it's before the high court.
Now, Michael himself is going to be arguing his case before the court. Isn't that unusual?
It's extraordinary. Someone to actually file a lawsuit and then represent themselves all the way through and all the way to the Supreme Court is, it may be unprecedented or certainly close to, particularly since he's not even an attorney. He is a lawyer, and the distinction being by trade and practice, he's a physician. He started getting frustrated with some of the laws governing medicine in this country, so he went to law school at a very prestigious school, the University of Michigan, to give him better tools to take on the medical establishment. But he's never taken the bar exam, so he's not an attorney. The court gave him special permission to argue his own case. I think they must have seen that he did such a competent job at the, in the federal court in the Ninth District that there's no reason to deny him that opportunity before the high court. But it is extraordinary.
What is your role in this situation?
Well, a couple things. Originally, when I met Mr. Newdow, I just volunteered to help any way I could. So I've been kind of an informal advisor. I've helped set up his moot court dates to practice his argument in various places. And in Washington, I'm going to be helping him dealing with the media hordes like you, Robert, I'm going to be helping him after, you know, putting together his press conference on the steps of the Supreme Court, and then delivering him to, you know, the various networks and so forth, because he doesn't have an entourage. It's generally a one-man show. But as I'm also representing the American Atheists, Madeline Murray O'Hare's old organization that's the primary advocate for the rights of people who reject the sort of monotheistic tradition. And so I'm representing the American Atheists in this case as well. And I have filed an amicus brief, a friend of the court brief, on behalf of the American Atheists in support of what Mr. Newdow is doing.
You know much about the American Atheists and about the situation for atheists generally in this country. Michael talked about that in the course of his arguments before the mock Supreme Court a couple months ago, indicating that there's been massive discrimination against atheists and still is.
Well, I think it's one of those things a lot of people don't even think about. But yeah, it's still fairly popular, and it seems to be more or less politically okay to denigrate atheists in this country. For example, when I've told some people, attorneys and otherwise, that I was representing the American Atheists, people said to me, "You really think that's a good move for your career? And people are going to think you're an atheist." It's quite ironic, because if you really think about it, there are a lot of people that associate with religions for cultural reasons as opposed to intellectual reasons. And I've never seen an honest survey. Most surveys show that 10 to 15% of Americans are atheists and that they don't believe in the whole one God theory. But I guarantee that number is way higher than that. Certainly among people I know a lot of people who have questions who really don't believe in the traditional God. They may or may not disbelieve, but people are afraid to say it. If you think about it, if you admit, you can say you're a Scientologist or you're a Buddhist or you're a Catholic, but to say you're an atheist, it's more popular to say you're an agnostic than you're not really committing yourself to being associated with this maligned group. And a lot of people don't think about it, but I think that there's invasive and pervasive discrimination against atheists, and the Pledge of Allegiance is a good example. Every time they want to buy a product, they have to use currency about trusting God. You know, our government is not supposed to be in the business of promoting religion, period, and I think it's disgraceful. But I don't want to step out too far and be too opinionated, because I know your show, you don't like people to stir things up.
Yeah, try to be mellow, will you there, yeah. Paul, for heaven's sakes. I mean, you are going to speak before our most august body.
Everyone's so intimidated. We don't even have any callers, Robert.
Well, the sad truth is we don't have any phone lines in other than the one you're using. But perhaps after you've hung up, we can actually get the voice of the people, and perhaps the masses of screams of rage for your hide will reach to the suburbs, and you'll hear about that.
Yeah, here we go again.
What about religious folks? I know that when I was, as I said, at listening and recording unfortunately, the Michael's speeches, I should say his responses to the mock court, most of the folks were not religious. Most of them were not members of any particular church, but one was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, have you any sense of religious groups that are supporting the essentially the separation of church and state here, the removal of the words "under God" from the mandatory pledge?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if there are any such religious groups?
You know, I know that there are. I haven't seen them yet, but I know that there are a number of briefs that have been filed in this case from various religious organizations, and I'm sure that it's going to be used as a big moneymaker. You know, it's going to be this, you know, for the religious right and for sort of the strict right-wingers in this country, this is an opportunity to raise a lot of money. Look what those bad, evil people are doing now. They're taking God out of the classroom. And, you know, I think the arguments on the other side are extremely unpersuasive in terms of the context of the Constitution. For popular culture, though, they're great. This is a good way to raise money for the right wing. It's a good way to stir up, passion in a political year. And you could be certain, Robert, that if Mr. Newdow does, in fact, prevail and the court rules with him, that the next day the president will stand in front of 600 American flags and demand a constitutional amendment to put God back into the pledge. And it's the most cynical approach to public policy I've ever seen is what this administration is doing.
quite possibly true. But again, I was wondering, are there any religious groups that have actually supported Newdow in his attempt to get the pledge?
Oh, I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question.
No, but your answer was interesting. Anyway, go ahead.
I know that there are, well, I guess it depends on what you say constitutes a religious group, because the American Atheist is actually, I would say, is a religious group. They have a particular philosophy. It's a philosophy of materialism, which is the only things that exist and that they believe in are natural forces, that they don't believe in fairies, spooks, gods, witches, or other phenomenon that they believe have actually created real problems historically. So I would say the American Atheist is one. I believe the Church of Universal Life may, in fact, be signed on as a supporter as well. Some of the more open-minded faiths, I think, probably would not in any way be concerned or intimidated by this bullying approach of the federal government to basically force people into submission if they don't agree with the with the more accepted status quo religious approaches.
I think Baptists originally were very much concerned with separation of church and state. Not so much perhaps Southern Baptists, but some Baptist groups. I remember. Mm-hmm. Hasn't this issue arisen before? I mean, Under God has been in the pledge since 1954, and on the currency, I'm not sure how far back it's been on the currency, probably throughout the century, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know when that started. I imagine, there have been references to God throughout our culture. The difference is it's okay to have references to God that are an acknowledgement that, in fact, you know, religion and those who believe strongly in God have played a real legitimate role in the development of our country. And so I'm less concerned personally with the things like the money or whether the Ten Commandments are posted somewhere or the fact that the Congress starts every session with a prayer said by a chaplain the taxpayers pay for. I'm not so concerned about when you're talking about adults who can make their own choices, the arcane references to God don't personally bother me. I think they're unconstitutional, but I don't think they're nearly as dangerous as what we're doing when we start in forcing school teachers to lead children ineffectively in prayer from the time they're 5 and 6 years old. I think that's degrading and really dangerous, and I don't think there's any conceivable need for it. And so that's personally where I kind of draw the line.
Well, we've been talking. So
I'm learning to not answer your questions and just answer my own. It's more fun, and then I could become a spin meister like yourself.
Yeah, you're training for your Washington experience.
I can see
that now. But possibly it's going to be a Newdow Sanford ticket in 2004.
Ticket to somewhere, right?
Yes.
But it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. It's not, you know, I probably won't have an opportunity again to appear at the Supreme Court. Certainly, when I have a brief filed in the case. And I think it's a fascinating.
Now, will you be in the court listening to him, or will you be outside?
No, I'll be inside for the argument.
And you're not going to engage in any funny, but you're not going to embarrass the court and embarrass yourself, are you?
Well, if you have a personal message for Justice Rehnquist, if you can slip it to me, then I'll make a point of being sure that you are heard, that the
I'll
voice
flip
of
it to you, and you can flip it to
the
him.
The counterculture voice of Santa Cruz can be heard by one of the larger groups of hypocrites assembled in our time.
I know that you will be happy to press those words directly to the court when you see them, because you are a fearless leader and a man who speaks out unashamedly on all issues at all times.
Well, if you could record that, I'll use that in my next campaign for whatever it is I don't run for.
I had my fingers crossed.
There you go.
In any case, we've been talking with Paul Sanford, local attorney who isn't afraid to get his legal robes dirty by descending to the street to defend people's civil rights on occasion, and who actually ascends to the highest, I don't know what we'd say. Anyway, heads for the Supreme Court next week. When you're coming back, when are we going to hear the, we aren't going to hear about this for a number of months.
Yeah, the ruling won't come out probably until...